Hi, I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and this is Toxic Free Talk Radio, where we talk about how to thrive in a toxic world. It's Tuesday, November 26, 2013, and I'm here in Clearwater, Florida, where it's going to rain. And today we are talking about something that is very, very, very important. Not that everything on the show isn't important. Everything is important. But this is particularly a subject that affects everyone. It affects, well, all toxic chemicals affect everyone, but this really is like, this is something that's happening to every person practically on the planet, and everybody is exposed to this. And particularly, it's a problem. What we're going to be talking about today is for women who are pregnant, because it affects the health of the fetus once it's born for the rest of their life. And so this is something where listen, because this is really important. My guest today is Gretchen Lee Salter. She's the Senior Program and Policy Manager for the Breast Cancer Fund. And they've just issued a report called Disrupted Development, The Dangers of Prenatal BPA Exposure. Now, I know you've all heard about BPA and how it's ubiquitous in our environment, but Gretchen's going to tell us how it affects our health and particularly the health of children yet to be born. Hi, Gretchen. Thanks for being with me.
Hi, Deborah. My pleasure. Thanks so much for having me.
You're welcome. This is just, I can't tell you how important I think your report is. But first, before we talk about it, tell us a little bit about how you got into this field and also about the Breast Cancer Fund.
Sure. Well, the Breast Cancer Fund, we're a national organization and we're based in San Francisco. And we were founded in 1992 by a woman named Andrea Ravenet Martin, who at 42 was diagnosed with breast cancer, the first woman in her family to be diagnosed with breast cancer, and was given a 40% survival, 5-year survival rate. I was basically told to go home and put her affairs in order. And after grueling treatment and another diagnosis, she thought that putting her affairs in order meant founding this organization, and we're also happy she did. Started in the 90s as a funding organization, but in around 2000, 2001, we shifted our focus to really be focused on advocacy and focused solely on breast cancer prevention by identifying and advocating for the elimination of the toxic chemicals and radiation that are linked to the disease. We have seen huge upticks in the rates of breast cancer over the last 40 years. In fact, breast cancer incidence has tripled in the last 40 years, and that really goes hand in hand with the increased use of industrial chemicals. So,
can you just tell us? Yeah, we're going to talk about BPA and your report, but as long as we're just right here, can you just mention some of the chemicals that you found in your organization contribute to breast cancer?
Sure. Well, there are several. So bisphenol A certainly is one that we've been focused on quite a bit. But there are a number of breast carcinogens. Benzene is something that's used quite a lot in the workplace. We've looked a lot at a chemical called phthalates, which are a plasticizer that is used in PVC plastic to make it soft and malleable, but it's mm-hmm. also used in fragrances to help spread the fragrance around. And there are just a whole host of chemicals that you can find that have been linked to the disease. We have published a compendium of research, and we do this every couple of years or so, called State of the Evidence, where we aggregate all of the scientific evidence, all the scientific evidence on chemicals that are linked to breast cancer and radiation linked to breast cancer, and really kind of put the research all in one place and put it in a way that is very easy to understand and for a lay audience, because I'm certainly not a scientist, and our scientists here have really made it very easy for me to do my job. So, one of the biggest contributors we're seeing to breast cancer is the spread of something called endocrine-disrupting chemicals, and bisphenol A falls under that as well as a number of other like phthalates that I mentioned, some of the flame retardants, PBDEs, people may have heard of those, triclosan, which is used very often in antibacterial hand soaps or antibacterial cleaners. They're all endocrine disrupting compounds, and those are some, those are things that we are really, really looking at and have been looking at for the last few years or so, because of their ability to either mimic or disrupt our normal hormonal processes. And breast cancer is really a disease that's driven by hormones. A woman's lifetime exposure to estrogen, this is a very crude way to state it, but a woman's lifetime exposure to estrogen is directly related to her increased risk for breast cancer. So the more estrogen or estrogen-like compounds you are exposed to, the higher your risk of breast cancer. Again, that's a very crude way to put it, but, you know, in a nutshell, that's basically it. And so when you have chemicals like bisphenol A, like phthalates, like triclosan, that are able to mimic our hormones, that's really concerning to us, because we know that our hormones work in exquisitely low doses. We're talking in the parts per billion, parts per trillion. And so, you know, even just a little bit can set, you know, can set somebody off in the wrong direction. And as you mentioned, where we are most concerned right now is in early childhood and in prenatal development.
I just want to commend your organization for making a switch from fundraising to fight the illness to having your work be focused on preventing the illness and identifying the toxic chemicals. I think that's so important. That's what I've been doing for 30 years. So I'm very happy to see that you're doing this in the area of breast cancer, that you've just chosen an area to focus on so that we can find out what the information is and apply that in our lives.
Yeah, well, thank you so much, and thank you so much for the work that you do as well. You know, when we decided to, you know, change the focus of the organization, we really took a look at the breast cancer field and saw, and we wanted to find out what was missing. And there are a lot of great organizations that are focused on access to treatment and trying to find a cure and, you know, improving therapies. And those are all incredibly important things, and I don't want to minimize that at all. But where we saw a big hole was in this prevention piece. And, you know, as we all know, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. And
absolutely.
So, you know, and so we thought, well, this is something that needs more attention. And I think a lot of times people think about chemicals and toxins in our lives as an environmental issue. But this is really how we see it. This is a public health issue. This is something that is affecting our health, you know, on a day-to-day basis. And, you know, I have personally been very lucky in that you asked how I came to this organization. Mm-hmm. You know, I've been lucky in that I, you know, have not, I'm one of the few people that has not had any, you know, breast cancer or really cancer in my family. But that doesn't mean really anything at this point, because, you know, I know what I've been exposed to. I know what my 3-year-old daughter, and I'm currently pregnant, I know what my baby is being exposed to, even though I try to live as cleanly as possible. And so for me, I am doing this for the next generation, and I am so happy that I've been able to work at the Breast Cancer Fund and focus, you know, our attention on prevention, which I think is, you know, ultimately going to win the day.
I think so too. And this morning I actually found out, and I don't think I have the quote right here in front of me, but I found out, I was researching something and I came across, the Pollution Prevention Act from 1990, the Federal Pollution Prevention Act from 1990. And it says right there very clearly, and I'm not quoting them because I don't have it in front of me, but it says the number one thing to do is to reduce the pollutants at the source. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what you and I and many others are talking about, is reducing instead of it says Congress says that we should be reducing pollution at the source. I had actually never heard that statement before, but I mean, it's actually law that we should be doing this in the United States. But I mean, we could have a whole other show about what's not happening according to that law. But
we could,
we're going to
stick
to our said subject. But I just, when I read that, I went, oh my God, it's actually a law in the United States of America that we should be reducing toxic chemical exposure. And we need to go to a break, but we'll be right back. I'm Deborah Wingat. This is Toxic Free Talk Radio. And my guest today is Gretchen Lee Salter from the Breast Cancer Fund. And when we come back, we're going to talk about the dangers of prenatal BPA exposure. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Gadd, and today my guest is Gretchen Lee Salter from the Breast Cancer Fund, and we're talking about the dangers of prenatal BPA exposure. Now, everything we're about to start talking about is from a report called Disrupted Development, The Dangers of Prenatal BPA Exposure. And you can get that by going to toxicfreetalkradio.com and looking for today's show, and I have a link to it there. And it will give you everything we're going to say. You can read about in the report. At least I think most of what we're going to say will be in the report. Gretchen, let's just start out with the brief history of BPA and talk about what the health effects are.
Sure. Sure. So BPA is short for bisphenol A, and it is a chemical that was originally synthesized to be actually a synthetic estrogen replacement. And it was shelved because it was shelved in favor of other stronger estrogens, which I can talk about a little bit later. But an enterprising scientist was able to figure out that this chemical made really great plastic and great shatterproof plastic. So that polycarbonate, hard, clear plastic you see has bisphenol A in it. It's also used to line food cans to keep the metal separate from the food. And it's also used in thermographic receipt paper. Unfortunately, this chemical is really just not very stable at all, and so it leaches out of plastic, it leaches out of food cans into our food, and on the receipt paper itself, it just ends up on our fingers quite a bit. So there is a lot of exposure. 93% of the American population has BPA in their bodies right now, according to the CDC, and it's a pretty ubiquitous chemical. And studies have really shown that this is a chemical which is not very surprising considering it was put on the market or originally synthesized to be an estrogen replacement. Sure enough, it does mimic estrogen. And this is one of those chemicals that I was talking about before called an endocrine disrupting chemical in that it operates in very, very low doses. So we're seeing health effects in the parts per billion, parts per trillion range. And we are seeing exposure to BPA leading to increased risk for health effects like breast cancer, prostate cancer, learning disabilities, other neurological problems, obesity, diabetes, and early puberty. So BPA is used, like I said, in a number of different applications. And the Breast Cancer Fund and our allies in the environmental health movement have been trying for years to get it out of plastics and out of food cans and out of receipt papers. And we really focused, for the first part of this movement on kids' products and on baby bottles and on infant formula. And while that was an absolutely necessary thing to do, and we are 100% confident that that was the right thing to do, it, in a way, almost came at the expense of the most vulnerable population, and that really is the prenatal environment, a developing fetus. Because the developing fetus is so susceptible to hormonal exposures and hormonal changes, that the fetus is growing and changing every day, that growth is really directed by hormones, and when you introduce a hormone mimicker like bisphenol A into the picture, it really can throw off development and set that baby on a course for increased risk for later life disease. And so I think a lot of people have a hard time figuring out what the heck is a breast cancer organization, a disease that usually hits people in, middle age or later in life, doing focusing on prenatal exposures. But if we really are going to prevent breast cancer, that's where we have to start, because unfortunately, that's where breast cancer starts.
Okay, so I'd just like to interrupt for a second and just add a little bit more information here, because there's a lot of things that go on in our bodies that I know, even as a writer in this subject for many, many years, that I had to learn when we came up with endocrine disruptors, like, what is that? And so I just want to explain that one of the ways that the body communicates is through hormones. And so there's a hormone, and there's a hormone receptor site. And what happens is that it's like putting a key in a lock, and the hormone goes in to the receptor site and it gives it information, and that makes your body run. Now, what happens with these endocrine disruptors is that, as Gretchen has been saying, that they mimic a hormone. And so they're in your body, and they find a hormone receptor site, and it's similar enough. And what they do is that they go in and into the site as if they are a hormone. And then when the real hormone comes along, there's no space for the hormone to go into the site. And so your body doesn't get the information that it's supposed to have. And when I read that, I was just horrified when I learned that, because it's really like disruption is the right word, because the whole communication just gets disrupted. And I just wanted to add that so that people understand how that works, how serious this is.
No, that, and you know, and thank you so much. That's a really great way to explain it, and I've heard it explained that way before, and it's just, it's exactly right. You know, either the hormone, the actual physical hormone that has been, that the body is telling to, you know, fire, cannot get into that lock, or that, you know, that lock wasn't supposed to be open in the first place at that time. And so it really is, like you said, just disrupting the whole development. And so our, you know, what we did in our report was looked at the scientific data on prenatal exposures to BPA. We first wanted to see, is exposure happening? Because BPA is one of those chemicals that, where the good news is actually flushed out of the body relatively quickly. You know, within 24 to 48 hours, BPA is processed through the body and leaves the body. The bad news is because it's so ubiquitous, we are constantly re-exposed over time.
Yes.
And that is why, you know, that's why we come up with this 93% figure that the CDC says that are exposed, because even though it travels through us so quickly, we're exposed every day. And so it's not as though, you know, because we're getting rid of it, it's a good thing if you're just constantly re-exposing yourself. So we wanted to see if this exposure was actually happening in utero, because there's a big, you know, we used to think that the placenta really filtered all the bad things out, and we are.
And before you tell us about that, we need to take
a
break. So I'm just going to interrupt you before you start talking about it. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and my guest today is Gretchen Lee Salter, and we're talking about what happens in prenatal exposure when mothers, pregnant women, consume BPA. We'll be right back. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and my guest today is Gretchen Lee Salter from the Breast Cancer Fund, and we're talking about the dangers of prenatal BPA exposure. And Gretchen, you were talking about why we have to start with prenatal exposure in order to prevent breast cancer.
Sure. And as I was saying, you know, breast cancer really does start in the womb. That is where, you know, our development really starts. And as we talked about earlier, our hormones are really directing that development. And so when we introduce synthetic hormones like BPA, it really disrupts that environment. And so what our report did is that we looked at all of the scientific data on prenatal exposures to BPA, both the animal and human data, and found that, first of all, yes, you know, fetuses are exposed to BPA in the womb. The placenta is not filtering BPA out, and we have found BPA in umbilical cord blood, in amniotic fluid, and in fetuses themselves in animal models. And then we looked at the data to look at the health effects of that prenatal exposure to see if, you know, we're seeing increased risk for diseases like breast cancer, prostate cancer, early puberty. And sure enough, yes, the scientific evidence is showing us that prenatal exposure to BPA is leading to increased risk for all of the diseases that I mentioned. So, you know, this is, it's kind of something that's a little bit counterintuitive in a way, because I think we've all been so conditioned to think, well, we need to focus on babies and we need to focus on small children, which is incredibly important. And of course we should focus on that early stage of life. But we are missing a critical window, and that is really the fetal exposure. And the only way to protect fetuses and to protect those that are in the womb is really to protect everybody, because you really have to protect the pregnant mother. And you have to look at what she's buying, and she's buying what adults are exposed to. So it's not enough to tell pregnant women, well, it's your responsibility, it's your fault. Pregnant women have enough to worry about, as one myself,
I
know. There is a lot of pressure put on pregnant women, and so I don't want this to seem as though we are putting one more thing on pregnant women. What we are calling for is for companies to stop using BPA in their canned food, to stop using it in receipt paper. And we're calling on the government to start passing common sense laws that won't allow chemicals like BPA in canned food in the first place.
I totally agree. Now, I should mention that there are several companies that are already using BPA-free cans, small, natural and organic kind of companies. So the technology already exists. It's not like that a company could say, well, there are no BPA-free cans. There are, and people are using them, and it's just a matter of a company choosing that. Now, I don't know what the expenses are, but obviously companies are already doing it, and that it's just a choice. If they need to charge 3 more cents in order to have a BPA-free can, I'm sure that wouldn't make a lot of difference in their sales. And also cash register receipts, the same thing. There are cash register receipts available that do not have BPA. So, again, it's a choice. And you could, wherever you go, you could just start asking people, well, does this cash register receipt you're about to put in my hand, does it have BPA? And just, you know, just start talking about these things.
Right.
Because it is a choice. It's not a matter of we don't have to develop new technology. These products already exist. It's just that people need to use them.
Well, and I think, you know, in the case of cans, this was something that has actually been, you know, a little bit difficult for the industry, because the technology wasn't really there in terms of a one-for-one chemical substitute that works for everything. BPA is very convenient in that it works for all kinds of foods. But some of the alternatives that are out there, not all, but some of the alternatives don't work for, you know, highly acidic foods or foods that are high in sodium. So it may be a variety of alternatives. But as you mentioned, some companies have already gone completely BPA-free, and those are Annie's Organics and Amy's Kitchen. They are both completely BPA-free. Of course, we are, you know, still trying to figure out what it is they are actually using in place of BPA. Our understanding is that it's a modified polyester, and our question back is, well, modified by what?
Yes.
You know, we don't know. And so this is, you know, this is something where the answers are not completely crystal clear, but at this point the good news is that every single can manufacturer has committed to transitioning away from BPA, but as you said, it's a choice in terms of how long are they going to take to really make that transition. And so we've been calling on can manufacturers for the last couple of years to not only get out of BPA, but to tell consumers what it is that they're using, because the last thing we want to do is go from a chemical like BPA to something that's, you know, just as bad or even worse. So,
yes.
You know, for this, it's just really critical that the alternatives are actually safer and that companies are being very transparent about this, because consumers at this point are educated and they're not willing to, you know, buy something if they don't know what's in it. So we've been trying to
I think that's true, and this is something that I've been saying for years and years and years and years, is that how can we know if the companies don't disclose? And an example I often use is that if you were buying applesauce, the label should say apples, polluted water, pesticides, et cetera, so that you really know what it is that you're getting, instead of having to go over to the organic one and have it say organically grown filtered water.
Right.
You know, and so it's like what's happening in the labeling now and in the marketing is that companies are advertising what they don't contain, but the companies that are selling the toxic products are not required to disclose what they do contain in
right.
terms of the toxic chemicals. I mean, cleaning products are some of the most toxic chemicals on the market, and yet the labeling law specifically for cleaning products says you don't have to tell the customer what's in the product as long as you put the little warning label on it that says danger, caution, skull and crossbones. But that, you know, this is ridiculous. We should have open transparency. We should be able to know everything accurately that is in any packaged product so that we can make the proper choices ourselves. And, we're going to
absolutely. And, you know, we have introduced the Breast Cancer Fund, in addition to calling on manufacturers, have been working both in Congress but also with state legislators, because state legislators are really the ones who are at the forefront of this movement, of the toxics movement. And a number are introducing legislation, and a number have introduced legislation in the past to, you know, regulate BPA in baby bottles, and now they are starting to move on to canned food. And so we're very excited about that. And the great news is that, you know, it was really the threat of legislation and a couple states passing legislation that actually was able to make the market shift away from BPA in baby bottles and sippy cups. And we're hoping that the same proves true in canned food. We think that a number of states are going to start regulating this and are going to start introducing legislation. And we're hoping that that push will push the market faster so that, you know, BPA and cans becomes a thing of the past.
Good. I would like to see that too. We need to take another break, and we'll be right back with Gretchen Lee Salter from the Breast Cancer Fund to talk about how we can reduce our exposure to BPA. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd. This is Toxic Free Talk Radio, and we'll be right back. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and today my guest is Gretchen Lee Salter, Senior Program and Policy Manager for the Breast Cancer Fund. And if you want to go to their website, it's breastcancerfund.org, and there you can see the report we've been talking about, Disrupted Development, the Dangers of Prenatal BPA Exposure. And as Gretchen mentioned earlier, they have some information about other toxic chemicals besides BPA that contribute to breast cancer. So you can get all that information there, and is a worthwhile organization to support. So Gretchen, I totally am in agreement with everything that you're doing to get regulations changed, to get manufacturers changed. And my viewpoint for the past 30 plus years has been that while all that stuff is happening, we still need to be protecting ourselves individually. So,
absolutely.
That's what I write about, and so I just want us to talk a little bit about how individuals can reduce their BPA exposure. And we've already talked about the BPA in the cash register receipts. So, what are some tips that women could do when they go when they're buying things? What do they need to do to reduce that exposure?
Sure. Well, for the time being, you know, we are, we're saying to try to limit your exposure to canned food. And there, I mean, it's tough because canned food is very convenient. And certainly at this time of year, you know, fresh vegetables are not, you know, readily available in a lot of places. But there are some great strategies and some, you know, very cost-effective strategies to, you know, getting vegetables that don't come from a can, like buying frozen vegetables. They are often healthier for you because they don't contain the sodium that's often used in canned food. And a lot of soups now are coming in these cardboard containers, these aseptic containers that are manufactured by a company called Tetra Pak. And so you can find these cardboard containers that contain soup. They sometimes contain tomatoes. And we're finding that those are increasingly being used in place of canned food. And so you can find them right just there in the canned food aisle.
Yeah. Yeah.
Another really important thing to do when you're eating out is to ask. You know, ask your waiter, ask your server if any of the food that they are preparing has come from a can, and try to find, you know, items on the menu that don't contain canned food. The other big thing is, you know, I know we talked about receipts, but, you know, very often we're handed receipts and, you know, we just grab them and go. The biggest thing is to wash your hands, to make sure that we're not,
yes,
and especially before you eat, to make sure that that BPA isn't getting into that sandwich or whatever it is that you're eating. And then when it comes to plastics, you know, BPA has really been removed from a lot of our plastic food containers. Most, you know, reusable water bottles are BPA-free. Most baby bottles, sippy cups, food storage containers are all BPA-free at this point. But again, we're running into this problem of not knowing exactly what the alternative is being used. So we are still recommending that for a reusable water bottle, go out and get a stainless steel water bottle, like a clean canteen. They are, you know, we know that they don't contain BPA or any other plastic, and we know that they are safe. For storing food, we still recommend using glass, you know, Pyrex containers with a lid.
Me too.
And,
yeah.
You know, and really just, you know, one of the biggest things, too, is do not microwave in plastic.
Yeah.
You know, especially when you get a, you know, a frozen dinner, put it on a plate and stick it in the microwave. Don't microwave it in that plastic because we just don't know what's in there. As you said, the labeling laws are just very few and far between, and so it's very difficult to know, you know, what chemicals are where. And so we know that microwaving in glass or ceramic or storing food in glass and ceramic is a much safer option than plastic.
Also, a thing to remember about plastic is that heat will make plastic outgas more. It will make phthalates released from the plastic. And so if you're using plastic, like the, you know, those plastic storage containers, don't put hot food in it. Wait until the food cools down and then put it in whatever the container is, because that will minimize the plastic getting into your food if you choose to use plastic. And also freezing things in plastic, when you make a plastic colder, it will release less plastic. When you make it hotter, then it releases more. And that includes water bottles sitting out in the sun in front of the convenience store and things like that. So watch out for the temperature of plastics.
Right, right. And, you know, as much as possible, just try to reduce plastic in your everyday life.
I totally agree.
This day and age. It's really, really hard. I totally get it. But as much as you can, just reduce your use of plastic and increase your use of stainless steel and glass containers.
Yeah. Totally agree. Now, I would also add that in addition to buying frozen food instead or using aseptic containers instead, that I always like to suggest that people fix their own food at home. I for a long time, I thought that if I bought something in glass, like pasta sauce in glass, that there would be no cans involved. But then one day I was talking to a woman at a farmer's market who was selling pasta sauce in glass. And I asked her about her ingredients, and she very proudly told me how she used canned tomatoes, Italian canned tomatoes.
Yeah.
And
so, yeah, I mean, absolutely. I think, you know, as much as possible, make food at home. But, you know, part of what we try to really focus on is being you know, for some people, that's just not realistic.
It
doesn't work all the time. I know for me, I love to make my own soup, but my gosh, trying to find the time to do that can sometimes be challenging. If you can't do it, you know, I think you're absolutely right. The best thing to do is to make your own food and to buy fresh fruits and vegetables. If that's not an option, go for frozen, go for things in glass or any aseptic containers.
What I found over the years is that it really is a progression of taking steps in the right direction, and that while the best choice might be to buy, not even buy, but grow all your organic food in your backyard, which I is something I can't make happen in my life. But then you know, you just back up and say, well, could I buy organic food? Well, if not, then could you buy, something that's not in a can? And you just keep backing up to see where you are and then taking those baby steps forward. And as we all move forward, I've seen tremendous improvement in having things be less toxic over the last 30 years. It's kind of funny because in some ways we know more now about what's toxic and it seems more frightening. But hand in hand, we also have more non-toxic products than we've ever had. We have more organic products. We have more choices. We have more availability. So it's just a matter of making those choices one by one, doing the best we can, knowing what the options are, and then making the choice that we can make. Even if we can't make the absolute most optimum choice, there's a step that we can take in the right direction.
Absolutely. And it really, you're absolutely right. This is definitely a continuum. I think there's, access in some communities and not access in other communities.
Right.
And so
right.
I think our real challenge too is to make sure that access to fresh, healthy, options are available everywhere, not just in some communities and not just in, higher income communities. We're actually seeing that low income communities have higher rates of BPA exposure and higher BPA exposure than in middle or upper income communities. So this is a huge issue, it's a big environmental justice and a social justice issue. And so we want to make sure that everybody can be protected, not just those who can afford to be.
We should all be living in a safe and healthy and not toxic world. I think that we all have the human right to have that. We're life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Life is the first thing. And how can we be alive and well if we're being constantly exposed to toxic chemicals? So
right.
We need to be acting as individuals, but also collectively to say what's good for all of us. And that's where I admire what you're doing and other organizations. I admire so much that you're making the world a better place. I would love to be out of a job because I would love to be able to say, there's no more need for me to tell individuals what to do to protect themselves from toxic chemical exposures because there wouldn't be any. That's my goal.
Right. Well, we would too, and I think that that's something that is, very hard for some folks in the chemical industry to understand, who accuse us of just trying to scare people to scare up money. And that's really not what we're doing. We're trying to get information out there so that we don't have to be doing this, because there are a lot of problems in the world. And, it would be great if we could, check one off of our list and check this one off. This is easy. This is very, very easy. It's just a matter of having the political will to actually do the right thing and change our laws so that chemicals like bisphenol A and like the other ones that I mentioned will never be allowed on the market in the first place.
Yes, that's my goal too. Well, thank you so much for being with me today, Gretchen. I'm sure that everybody learned a lot on this very, very, very important subject. It's really vital for us to see how far it goes back to the very conception almost of, I would say even preconception of the health of the father and mother and the quality of the material that the fetus is made out of, the toxic chemicals that might be there. It just pervades everything. So everything that each of us are doing is all making a difference. So you've been listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio, and I just had a thunderclap. We're going to have a thunderstorm right now. Toxic Free Talk Radio, I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and happy Thanksgiving.